Chapter 30. And there was I, Jemai said, thinking maybe I'd get paid for nothing. Silly me, as if anything's ever that easy. I didn't mean to raise any unrealistic expectations, Jeffrey said. They were moving side by side down the docking tube, brushing themselves along with fingertip pressure against the rough textured walling. Look at it this way, though, he went on. You're hoping this is going to do wonders for your reputation. Wouldn't work if it turned out to be too easy, would it? Fuck my reputation. Right now I'll settle for easy. They had matched the habitat's spin in the moments before docking, but as they traversed the connecting tube, Jeffrey still felt weightlessness, albeit with a sensation that the world was tumbling slowly around him. The docking tube was aligned with the Winter Palace's axis of rotation, and he would therefore need to travel a lot further out before he felt anything resembling a normal gravitational pull. But even in the absence of visual cues, that spin was impossible to ignore. They were wearing spacesuits, of course, lightweight, hypermodern, form-fitting models from the Quaenor's own equipment stores. Like the submarine harness in Tiamat, Jeffrey's suit had put itself on around him, splitting open, encasing him from head to toe and reassembling along a dozen improbable seams that were now completely invisible and airtight. Technology had come a long way since Eunice's ancient, gauntlet-like moon glove was state-of-the-art. Mira Gilbert's mobility harness was not optimized for weightlessness, and since the station was presently denying Augreach, there was no way for Arethusa to ching a proxy. Given that someone had to physically enter the palace to locate Hector, Jeffrey was glad it was just the two of them. Arethusa would want to know what they found, and she would ching aboard as soon as that became feasible, but for now, the Pans would have to be patient. Even Eunice couldn't stick her oar in. They had passed without incident through the connected airlocks of the Quaenor and the Winter Palace, but now they came to the first obstruction. An internal door, armored against pressure loss, blocked their progress. It was circular, cartwheeled with heavy B-striped reinforcing struts. The manual control had no effect, and the door was certainly too large to force. I keep having to remind myself Hector didn't come this way, Jeffrey said. For all we know, this door hasn't been opened in years. Give me a minute, Jemai answered. I've cracked data vaults that haven't been opened in a century. This is just warm-up stuff. Jemai had spent her time on the Quaenor profitably, packing a hold-all full of anything she deemed useful. Now she rummaged through the bag's weightless guts, pushing aside intestinal pools of data cables and stick-on sensor pads. She came out with a chunky rectangle of black plastic, geckoed it to the side of the door over the operating panel, and connected a grey cable to her suit's forearm. She tapped a panel on the forearm, which sprang open to form a surprisingly large keypad and screen. The suits might be modern, but they'd been customized to PAN specifications, which meant physical readouts and data entry options. What's the story? Jeffrey ventured, when she'd been tapping keys and pursing her lips at scrolling numbers for several minutes. The story is... We're in. She tapped one last key, ripped the stick-on pad away from the panel. The door wheeled aside, recessing into a slot in the sidewall. The door's bare metal edges were toothed like a cogwheel. It was that easy?
Easier than it looked. Wanted to make absolutely sure there was nothing nasty behind the door, like fire, or vacuum, or sarin nerve gas.
We're in suits.
I like additional guarantees.
Jemai packed her equipment away and sealed the hold-all.
No second chances in this line of work. Learned that in Lagos.
They called back to the Quaenor, told them that they were passing through the door. There was still no Augreach, but for the moment, simple comms were getting through.
We've reached a right-angled bend, Jemai reported. It's the only way forward. Looks like it runs all the way back out to their skin.
That makes sense, Jeffrey said. The Winter Queen fills the middle of the habitat, and her engines and aerobrake would block our progress if we tried to pass along the axis of rotation. We have to go up to move forward. Hector would have hit the same dead end coming in from his side.
Assuming he got this far, Jemai said.
He was inside this thing for a while before calling for help. They started moving along the radial shaft. It was wide and set with multiple hand and footholds, and to begin with, there was no sense that they were climbing either up or down.
but every meter took them further from the axis, thereby increasing the tug of centrifugal gravity, tending to push them still further from the axis. For a while, it was easy and pleasant to drift, but there came a point when it took more effort than anticipated to arrest his motion. In that moment, Geoffrey's inner ear decided forcefully that his local universe now contained a very definite up and down, and that he was suspended the wrong way up in what appeared to be an infinitely deep, plunging lift shaft. Vertigo gripped him. He caught his breath and closed his eyes.
Easy, Jemai said.
He forced his eyes open. Has to be a better way.
Probably is if we'd come through the other lock. Can't see many people putting up with this shit. Then again, did your grandmother get many visitors?
No, he answered, as with great care he inverted himself so that the force of gravity was acting in the direction of his feet, not his head. Just Memphis, and even then not very often.
Take it one rung at a time, and don't look down any more than you have to.
We'll never get Hector back up this shaft if he's hurt.
Comes to that, we'll call for help from the Quenor. They can lower us a rope or use the ship's thrusters to take some of the spin off the habitat.
Anyone would think you'd done this a million times.
It's all just breaking and entering.
He could imagine Jemai grinning.
Used to delude myself that there was something in my brain, some developmental flaw, which might mean I was predisposed to criminality. Wouldn't that be glamorous? But I was wrong. The scans came back, and I'm almost tediously normal. Not a single brain module out of place or underdeveloped. I just happen to be more than averagely competent at breaking into things.
Geoffrey forced a smile of his own. He might not have dragged Jemai out of Lagos. She'd quit of her own accord, but he couldn't deny that there had been a large measure of self-interest. However it had worked out, it was good to have her back in his life. By turns, and his vertigo notwithstanding, he found a steady descending rhythm, always ensuring he had 3 points of contact with the wall. The suit might well protect him in the event of a fall, but he had no desire to put it to the test. When at last they reached the floor, they'd come, by the suit's estimation, a total of 75 vertical meters. Ambient gravity was now 1G, or as close as made no difference, and since the Winter Palace was only a little wider than 150 meters across, they must be very close to the interior surface of its insulating skin. In the restricted space at the base of the shaft, Geoffrey could do little more than walk a few paces in either direction before he reached an obstructing wall or door. The gravity felt convincing enough in terms of the effort required and the load on his joints, but his inner ear insisted that something wasn't quite right. Jemai was already tackling the door that was their only point of ingress into the rest of the habitat. It looked similar to the one they'd already come through. But when more than a few minutes had elapsed without her managing to open it, Geoffrey guessed that this door presented additional challenges.
"You think there's something bad on the other side?" he asked, hardly daring to break her concentration, but not able to stop himself.
"There's pressure," she said quietly, "and unless these telltales are lying, it's not nerve gas or a wall of fire. That's not the problem, I'm afraid."
"So what is?"
"Doors interlocked with the one back up the shaft. Give me a day and more equipment than we came with, and I might be able to bypass that interlocking mechanism, but right now, with this equipment, I won't be able to get us through this one without closing the other,
and thereby cutting off contact with the Quenor."
"Give the man a cigar."
Geoffrey thought about this before answering. He didn't like it, and he doubted Jemai liked it either, but they had come a long way to turn back now.
"Have you ever been in a situation similar to this in Lagos, or anywhere else you did your contract work?"
"Crazy question if you are asking anyone else, but yes, once or twice. Some of those server farms were designed by seriously paranoid assholes."
"And you still went through?"
"Had a job to do."
"So your judgment was correct in the moment. You made a decision, and it paid off."
"Wouldn't be having this conversation otherwise. I mean, I'm not saying I would be dead exactly, but
sure as hell I wouldn't still be in this line of work.
In which case, I think you should open that door.
Jumai's hand was poised over the flip-out keypad on her sleeve forearm. Let's be clear about one thing, rich boy. No guarantees about what we'll find on the other side or how the door mechanism will look to me then. Might not be as easy to retrace as it was to come this far.
Whatever it takes.
After they had spoken to the Quaenor, Jumai said, You've grown balls of steel all of a sudden.
Guess it's just dawning on me. I've burnt too many bridges to start having second thoughts now.
He knuckled his fist against the chest plate of the suit.
Fuck it all. I'm Geoffrey Akinia. This is my grandmother's house, and I have every damned right to see what's inside it.
Hell yeah, Jumai said, and tapped the keypad.